And you're listening to The Brian Lehr Show on WNYC. I'm Mario Murillo in for Brian Lehr this morning. Now we'll take a look at a criminal justice issue that doesn't get much attention, perhaps because too often its primary function is misunderstood by the public: bail for criminal defendants. Politicians are always worried about being perceived as soft on crime, so reforming the city's bail system won't be tops on anyone's agenda anytime soon. But should it be? According to a new report, 70% of the roughly 13,000 people held in the city's jails on any given day are pretrial detainees. They're locked up but presumed innocent. Joining us now is investigative journalist Jarrett Murphy, whose expose on the city's bail system is in the latest edition of City Limits Investigates. He's their investigations editor at City Limits. It's great to have you with us this morning, Jarrett. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
First of all, maybe we can just start from the real basics. How is bail set in New York City?
Well, in New York, if you're arrested, you're brought within about 24 hours to one of the borough courthouses for your arraignment. And that's where a judge hears the charges against you and you're allowed to enter a plea. Sometimes cases are dismissed or pled out there. But if a case is going to continue, then the judge faces what's called the release decision. And he has essentially three choices. He can remand someone, which means he can say the seriousness of this crime is such that you have to stay in prison and jail until your trial
comes
up. And
those crimes are like?
Typically crimes like murder, very serious felonies. In addition, people who are potential immigration violators or parole or probation violators might also be remanded. But that's a fairly small pool of the entire defendant population. The other choices, the more likely ones, are to release someone on their own recognizance, which means they're given a slip of paper and said, your next court date is March 3rd, show up at 9:30, and the person's expected to do that.
And those are usually what kind of crimes?
They could be any kind of crime, really. They tend to be less serious crimes, but it's depending on the defendant and the facts of the case, it could be for anything from a very minor disorderly conduct violation to a drug crime, and even some violent crimes could be released on recognizance. But for about a third of defendants, which given the volume of the system in New York is tens of thousands of people a year, bail is set in the case. And what that means is the prosecutor asks typically for a financial amount of bail, $500, $75,000, anywhere in between or even more than that. And the judge approves a certain amount. And then the person is returned to custody and basically is told that if they can come up with the money, either cash or a bond from a commercial bail bondsman, they can get out of jail before their trial, and if they can't, then they stay.
Mm-hmm. Now, the premise of your piece, obviously looking at the numbers, which I want to get to in a second, but the premise of the piece is that generally people don't seem to understand what the whole idea of bail is. They think it's almost a punitive measure that's being instilled, and it's to keep people off the streets, but it's something else, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, typically you only hear about bail when something goes wrong with it. You know, a notorious suspect in a particularly infamous crime is given what's perceived as low bail, or someone who's out on bail does something terrible, like the murder this summer of the three college students in Newark. One of the people who's been accused in that was out on bail in a serious case. But the fact is that bail is not meant to punish, because the person on whom bail is set hasn't had a trial yet. They're presumed innocent. It's also not really designed in New York anyway to protect the public safety, because there's no mechanism for figuring out who will or won't commit a violent crime. It's really for one purpose only, and that is to make sure that a person shows up in court. The idea being that you'll set an amount that will, you know, be an incentive for someone not to skip, because they know if they do, they or their family loses money or property.
Mm-hmm. So now let's go through some of the numbers I said the one basically that 70% of the roughly 13,000 people held in the jails are locked up and presumed innocent. They're waiting trial, obviously, and they're many of them cannot post bail. Most of them can't post bail. What are the numbers in terms of the kinds of charges and the people who are being held, and what kind of crimes are those people being held for?
Well, it's interesting. The people who can't make bail at all during their cases, about half of them are held on bails of $1,000 or less, which indicates that their crime is fairly minor, but a bail still has been imposed. And the trick is that, you know, while $500 wouldn't be a lot for me, or, you know, if you were arrested, I could help you post that if you wanted. But if you can't afford it, it leaves you in something of a trap, because it's too much for you to afford if you're poor, but it's also too little for a commercial bail bondsman to really want to post it. A bail bondsman gets about 10% premium on any bail bond, and it takes a certain amount of time and staff effort to put a bond together. So for someone who's held on 500, 1,000, 1,500, most bail bonds, but not all, but most aren't going to post it, and so you're kind of stuck if you can't come up with the money.
So what does that do for the defendant? How does that impact the defendant in terms of the decision? They can't post bail. What do they do?
Right. Well, I mean, it obviously has two effects. The first is the immediate one. I mean, you're locked up, depending on what kind of case it is and how it plays out. It could be for a number of days or weeks or months. And obviously that means, you know, missing work, missing school, family problems. Jails are much safer now than they used to be, but they're still not pleasant places. So it has that effect. But it also has an effect on the disposition of your case. It's well known, for obvious reasons, that a person who is incarcerated pretrial has a much harder time proving their innocence or getting a better solution out of the court. It's harder to meet with witnesses. It's harder to tour the crime scene with your attorney. It's harder to meet with your attorney. When you show up in court, you probably end up looking a little worse for wear. And so it's harder to prove or get acquitted. And if you are convicted, it's harder to avoid a jail sentence after your pretrial incarceration. In addition, when you're locked up, it puts great pressure on you to plead out. Most criminal cases in New York City do not go to trial. They end up in guilty pleas or dismissals. But there are different kinds of guilty pleas. And if you are out walking around free, you have a lot more leverage to argue for a lower charge or less of a sentence or a lower fine. If you're locked up, you're probably going to do whatever you can to get out of jail, and so you'll take the plea.
So how does that work? Maybe you can give us some case studies, if you will, some anecdotal. I'm sure in your research and your investigation, you stumbled upon a lot of cases in which people did feel as if they were being kind of pressured to cop a plea or to take a certain approach that perhaps wasn't what they were in their best interest, and certainly perhaps not even in the interest of justice.
Right. Well, I was in a Queens Court one day this summer, Queens Arraignment Court on Queens Boulevard, and a guy was brought in, two guys on a marijuana possession charge. And, one of the gentlemen was clearly wanted to fight his case. He thought he was innocent. It wasn't his. It was in his friend's car, and he would have fought it. But it was clear that the judge was probably going to set bail on the case. He didn't have money on him. He'd already missed work. He wasn't sure that he could get the money within a couple days. And so he very begrudgingly took the guilty plea. And he was upset about it. It gives him a lengthier criminal record. And he didn't feel as though he was guilty. He felt it was an injustice, but he felt as though it was what he had to do. And a lot of people face that choice. The problem is that when you have been locked up for 24 hours in a police holding pen, and you're facing several days potentially on Rikers before you see another judge, you don't always consider all the implications of pleading guilty. Nowadays, and increasingly over the past few years, a guilty plea doesn't just result in a sentence that the judge imposes. There are other consequences, too. Being found guilty of a crime can affect your ability to get a license for certain jobs, to have public housing, in some states to receive food stamps or other welfare benefits, driver's licenses, the right to vote, all manner of things can be affected by it. So, the plea that you make in a heated moment in a very busy arraignment court to get out of jail can have years-long or even lifelong effects that not everybody who's part of that discussion really understands or explains to the defendant.
We're speaking with Jarrett Murphy. He's an investigative journalist. He's the investigations editor at City Limits Investigates, and his latest piece, Investigation, looks into the issue of bail and how it punishes the poor in many respects. What are perhaps the most extreme examples of how long people can actually stay in that condition before even copping a plea, but they're still being in pretrial detention? How long could those periods extend? Or is there a limit as to how long people can be detained without trial?
There are limits built into the state statutes. For example, if a prosecutor is the one who's delaying a case, people tend to have to be released out of jail in 30 or 60 days. The median, the amount of time a person who is held on bail is kept in is about 5 days. That's because you usually see another judge after 5 days, and you might take that opportunity to plead out. There was a case that has been found in the research, I think it was spanned 2004 to 2005, where someone was in jail for about a year. That is obviously an exception, but it can happen. It depends on how your case plays out and how sharp your lawyer is and the volume that the court system handles, which is substantial.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, I'm sure a number of people are wondering, well, perhaps this is pointing to a situation in terms of finances and the capacity for somebody to pay and post bail. But what are some of the alternatives? I mean, obviously, this is, you're not just going to let people out because you think that they can't post the bail, they don't have finances to do it. What are some of the alternatives that are being discussed that you're looking at?
Well, you're right. I mean, there's no denying that the court system has an interest in making sure people show up, and prosecutors and judges have a reason to believe that not everyone will. The trick is whether a financial bail really is the best way to address that problem. I mean, and that extends to the public safety question as well. Obviously, it makes sense that judges wouldn't want someone who they thought was going to kill somebody to be out on the street, but you probably wouldn't also want to just charge a fee for that privilege. What some systems do, Washington, D.C. in particular, they have another option, where you don't simply release someone on their own recognizance, but you also don't impose a fee for the liberty, and it's called release under supervision. What that means is that instead of being held on bail, most defendants are released to an agency, a government agency, that has different levels of tracking, you know, based on who seems likely to show up for court and who seems like more of a risk to miss or even flee prosecution. And, you know, there's skepticism about whether that could work in New York. It's a much larger system here. It would require a new agency. But, of course, the jail system is an agency. That's a bureaucracy, too, and it's a costly one. And there might be something to look at in terms of what other systems have done to keep tabs on people, make sure they come to court without imposing financial bail, which basically just makes sure you come to court by keeping you in jail if you can't afford it.
Are there a lot more people coming through the criminal justice system in New York City in recent years with the Giuliani and Bloomberg administration's kind of broken windows policing policy? Has that seen an increase in the numbers of people who are in this situation that you're describing?
Year to year, there have been some increases. I think what's probably surprising to people when you look at the fact that crime has fallen so much since Giuliani and through the Bloomberg years is that the number of arrests has basically stayed the same and gone up a little bit. What's changed is the composition of arrests. Misdemeanors have always been a big part of why people are arrested because they're just a more common crime, but they've become an even larger part in recent years, which makes sense because felonies are down and police officers have time to arrest folks for things like disorderly conduct and turnstile jumping and low-level drug crimes, things like that. So it's not that the overall number have changed. It's gone up slightly. It's that the composition has changed. And that complicates the bail picture because now you're setting bail on misdemeanors where the sentences are typically fairly short. And that can mean that someone ends up doing more time pretrial than they would have convicted of their crime.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Jarrett Murphy again of City Limits, and we're talking about the bail system here in New York City. And we have a few minutes where we can take your calls if you'd like to comment on the bail system. Maybe you have your own personal experiences you want to share with our listeners this morning. Give us a call. The number is 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Perhaps you've experienced this on either side. Either on something turned out not so bad, but perhaps you were perhaps shortchanged in this process. Let's talk about what are some of the alternatives and what is being proposed in New York. I mean, as I pointed out, it's probably not something that a politician is going to really embrace as a major call, given the fears of being charged with being soft on crime.
Right. And matter of fact, as is the case in many years, the legislature this year is looking at bail reform proposals, but they tend to move in the other direction, making bail harder to get, pretrial release more difficult for people charged with certain crimes or who have certain types of criminal records. So from a politician standpoint, there's probably not too much movement, although it is worth noting that Governor Spitzer's Commission on Sentencing Reform last week issued a preliminary report. They'll be conducting hearings. They didn't really address bail, but it's clear that there's a starting to foment a recognition that there are things that might be able to change about our criminal justice system without threatening the historic reduction in crime. One of the reform proposals out there, though, is being pushed by a private a nonprofit defenders group, the Bronx Defenders, and what they're doing is forming a bail fund, which would evaluate people who are held on low bails and use some funding from foundations and individuals to pay their bail and get them out.
Yeah, I'm familiar with them. Joining now, let's go to Derek in Manhattan, who has personal experience on this issue. Derek, welcome to WNYC.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I try to listen every day. The reporter is slightly in error, where he mentioned earlier that you're held for 24 hours before you get an arraignment for bail. The system, the law is that they can hold you for up to 7 days. They try to, you're supposed to expedite the arraignment so you can get in front of a judge. But the games they play in the system is depending on who's pressing against you and how much they can move your paperwork around, you can be held for up to 7 days. And I have been held for 36 hours before I got bailed, but the people I was in with, some of them were there for 4 and 5 days. Secondly, just quickly, the other issue is that you mentioned something earlier that's important. It's called the trifecta, I think, and in the when you're in the system, people who get the trifecta typically are innocent, and everybody knows it. When you're charged with disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, and obstruction of justice, when you get those three, that's when the cops really want to punish somebody for, I don't know, they don't have anything to charge them with, but they just want to mess with them. And when some people get the trifecta, and when you hear all three together, you pretty much know that it's all trumped up. Like the federal attorneys who were arrested in Brooklyn, when they saw the cops beating up a youth in the street and questioned it, that's what they were charged with.
Okay, thank you, Derek, for that call. I don't know if you nodding your head, your comments on that.
Yeah, well, the caller's first point is absolutely on target. The practice in New York, the statute, not the statute, but court precedent, is that a person is supposed to be arraigned within 24 hours. But it's not a hard and fast rule, and it is sometimes broken. I saw people who had been in for 2 days, 3 days even before seeing a judge. So that does happen. You know, from case to case, I don't know if it's necessarily a punishment of particular people or a volume issue. Either way, it's a problem if that's you, because you're basically, even before the judge gets to make a decision on bail, you're being detained pretrial. And some of those folks might be let go and dismissed. Basically, they've been in prison for something that you know, court didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about, for example, a good example, perhaps the most visible example, is during the Republican convention, when hundreds of people were being held or arrested for the protests at the convention. In that situation, what kind of bail system gets implemented?
Yeah, that's an interesting case. I don't know what the bail situation was there, but what was remarked upon was the fact that normally protesters have been given desk appearance tickets, which are technically an arrest, but you get to come into court on your own power. And that's part of a larger trend. The city used to do a lot more of that, and in the late 90s, it moved away from that. So now more and more people on minor charges are actually getting arrested, handcuffs, back of police cars, holding pens, and arraignments, which exposes folks to the bail question, because if you come into court on a DAT, a desk appearance ticket, it's fairly unlikely that bail is going to be set. If you came in on your own, you're going to get to go out until you face trial.
Mm-hmm. Allison in Brooklyn, thanks for calling WNYC.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for taking my call. I have a very simple question. If you post bail and appear in court, do you get your bail back?
That's a good question. You get it back if you make all your court appearances. And it's important to note that a lot of cases, you know, it's not one or two court appearances. If you follow it all the way to trial, it can be dozens, most of which aren't actually trial. They're just hearings, and you have to make all of them. But if you do and you are not convicted, you get the full amount of bail back. And as a matter of fact, if anybody listening has paid bail and not gotten it back, the Department of Finance has a list of about 500 people who have abandoned bails that they can now claim. If you are convicted, you lose a small fee. I think it's like 3%. However, you know, there are cases where a person misses a court date, maybe has a legitimate reason, shows up the rest of the time, and then there's a fight usually over whether the bail can be exonerated or not. But if you show up every time and you're found innocent, you get it back.
Yeah, just would imagine that you're looking in New York City, but other cities, urban areas, I'm sure they have similar problems with it, or your sense of that?
Well, some do. As I mentioned, Washington has this release under supervision program, which is a potential solution to the problem. And other places have been looking at changing how bail is done. Illinois, for example, got rid of commercial bail and now has a 10% bail system where everyone could just put up a small cash deposit. So there are places where new ideas are being tried. Because in a lot of places, unlike New York, jail overcrowding is a very severe issue. And sometimes convicted criminals are let out of jail to make room for people who are held on bail, which strikes some people as kind of odd.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we could look at also the federal system, some of the problems there that exist, because some of those bails are much higher, obviously.
They are. The difference is that for the federal system, people are rarely like picked up off the street for a federal crime. There's a grand jury. Yeah. And when people come to the arraignment, they have what's called a bail package. So you come with an idea, an argument to make to the judge for how he can secure your appearance at court without locking you up. So there's a bit more lead time.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Jarrett Murphy. Jarrett, I want to thank you for joining us this morning on WNYC. Investigative journalist Jarrett Murphy's latest piece is on the city's bail system. It's at City Limits Investigates, so check it out. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks very much.
You're listening to The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Mario Murillo. In a moment, we're going to take a look at why there are not so many women in the kitchens of New York City restaurants. Stay with us.